All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and we got a special, I mean, this is a really cool episode because we have two Seans on today.
Sean.
It's like twice the fun right here.
With the right spelling.
Yeah, with the correct spelling. Right. So we've got Sean D'Souza on the phone, on the line, on the
whatever this fake, is. Fake applause there, Sean.
I know. Applause in a box. I love it. I love it. Hey, laugh tracks have worked for years. Like, don't discount the laugh tracks and the clap tracks and all that kind of stuff. So welcome, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Oh, glad to be on.
Yeah. And you're coming. Tell the people where you're coming from.
The furthest place you can think of. Well, we're in New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the one place on the planet that where people walk around without masks and
must be nice. Man, I bet this air is so fresh.
It has been 3 months now that we've been like this. So, yeah, you can football stadiums everywhere. People just, it's like, it's 2019. Let's put it that way.
I think you guys have like two people with COVID there.
If we do, we have them at the border. Like what they, the general public there, has nothing. Let's put it this way. People have stopped washing their hands.
Yeah. It is 2019. Oh, my God.
Or maybe 2021. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows which way it's going? Absolutely. Yeah.
So Sean is the founder of Psychotactics. That's how I first discovered Sean. I've been on your email list for probably 5 years.
I'm going to one up that, Jonathan. So the place I first heard of Sean was Easing Articles.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's where I first heard about you. That's where I remember the name from.
Yep.
So when you emailed me and said, this is going to be our guest, I was like, I know that name.
Yeah.
And then I think I've followed you off and on for different things that you've done and things like that. But yeah, I remember you from the Easing Article days. Mm-hmm. You had a ton of, you were a, I pulled it up actually because you're still on there. Like you're platinum level expert author. That's impressive, man. Impressive stuff.
So. We didn't do anything. Yeah. We don't do a lot. We just do what we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one thing I want to talk about is one of the things I find fascinating is how the brain works and just how the brain goes, you know, you're creating systems or small chunks for the brain so that you can, it's much easier to persuade through and influence through the rule of three. So I want to get into that and just how the brain works because it's a little different. We've talked about, like, I think on this past episode, Sean and I talked about like the rule of three when it comes to catchphrases or, you know, taglines and things like that, how they're easy to remember. And you've got kind of a different take on that with from a visual standpoint, but we'll touch on that. But first we got to get into what we're about.
Get into our beverages. That's right. Let's talk about drinking. All right. Let's do a little day drinking. All right. So usually our guest goes first. So Sean, you can tell the people it's early there, right? It's 9 a.m. as we're recording this where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So let us know what it's you're drinking. Early.
No. I've been up since 4. So
yeah, I remember that. Like you get up at 4. Not in my repertoire.
I get to work at 4. I don't get up at 4. Yeah. Anyway, so what I'm drinking right now, this is like the fourth drink for the day. So I started out with lemon juice, went to coffee, and now it's just hot water. So there you go. That's.
So when you indulge in libations, what is your preferred choice?
Whiskey,
it really
right?
Depends. It depends on the day. Yeah. But one of the better drinks I've had is I made a cup of tea, like an Indian cup of tea, not one of those dip kind of things. So like a masala chai, and then I poured some Lagavulin in it, and that's Scotch whiskey for those who don't know the brand.
Yeah.
It was good. Yeah.
All right.
I should try that again. Yeah.
Yeah. You should
try masala chai with scotch. I don't know which is getting spoiled, the chai or the scotch.
We should mention that, I think we mentioned this before we were live. It's actually, it's about 9:20 a.m. your time on Friday. Yeah. So we're recording this on Thursday. We normally record on Friday afternoons. It's kind of weird for us because we're always having a beverage at the end of the week. But, you know, because you're, you know, what, 16 hours ahead, we're doing this on Thursday.
Always a good time to pull out a beverage. So, Jonathan, what are you having? Because I'm going to screw things up today. So.
I'm having a Schulzbrau from it's a Dunkel, but this is it's a German, it's a local craft import. It's a German, but all the ingredients are imported from Germany, but this is actually a local brewer here in Knoxville. And it's it's a Dunkel. So I've never had this, but it's a local, you know, they bring a everything in. So a local. Yeah, exactly.
A local Dunkel.
Local Dunkel.
That's catchy.
Actually, I picked this up at a Weigel's. That was kind of one of those last minute.
Yeah, for those that aren't Knoxville natives, Weigel's is like the local 7-Eleven type
store. That's right. I went all high end today.
Yeah. So, well, I'm going off the rails a little bit. So this is embarrassing, but like this kind of threw my week off a little bit. So, and I don't want to go to the store anymore because I don't want to wear a stupid mask. Like, right. I'm just like,
that's
I don't
my reason.
Fight. I don't want to get in a fight and I don't want to wear a mask. Like, so I don't know which, so I just, I ran out of beer. That's the problem.
Oh,
so I had to go to the whiskey cabinet.
Ah,
so today
good stuff.
I'm going with one of my favorite whiskeys, but not, it's not what you would expect. Like, but there's days like kind of early afternoon or even a late evening, I go for this little Jack Daniel's Honey.
Oh,
it's one of the few flavored whiskeys that I like.
Mm-hmm.
It's sweet, but not, it's pretty sweet, but it's not like crazy sweet, but it's so smooth. Like, yeah. It's just perfect. So I got my little carpenter's cup here.
There you go.
To put it on with the little Celtic symbol on it.
You had a splash of lemon juice there and you got your toddy.
Yeah, see, and I put it in the stainless steel, so you can't tell how much I'm having, right? It's just a little bit more is all I'm having, right?
We
just
can
a little
tell bit more. How much you're having.
Yeah, we saw that pour.
The bottle was full.
We just choose not to tell you.
That's right. That's right.
So, I'm having a little Tennessee honey from Jack Daniel's. Good stuff today. So,
well,
so cheers to everybody.
Cheers. Yep.
We even got fake cheer sounds. All right, it's time for the second one.
All right, John, we give a rating since you're having your morning brew. So we usually have a different beer on every week, and we give a rating to it, and it's on a scale of 1 to 5 pints. I don't think we've hit a 5 yet. So what do you rate your
hot water?
So. Rate your hot water. On a scale of 1 to 5 pints, give us a number on your hot water.
It's 5.
5.
There we go.
All right.
There we go. Our first 5. That deserves some applause or something. Where's the button?
All right. There we go. A 5 on the water. How about the whiskey?
I really like this one. This is what I keep in my flask also, mm-hmm. You know, to take out to parties and stuff. In case it's not a good party.
Yeah.
Or in case it is a good party. Totally depends on your perspective, I guess. I'll give this like a 4.5.
4.5. 4.5.
Yeah, it's solid.
I'll have to try
it's
that. Solid.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, just enough. It's like sweet with a little burn on the end. Mm-hmm. Because of the, you know, so it's good.
Very good. I'm going to give this one a 3. Nothing special. Not the best Dunkel.
Right. Yeah. It's right down the middle. Huh?
It's right down the middle.
All right, well, let's talk persuasion. I think Sean's going to fall asleep on us, so we better.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting, not because you're tired, because you're bored with us. So we're going to turn this show over to you a little bit. First of all, just give the people who aren't familiar with you a little bit of background. I know you got was that a strong shot of hot water there? Your face. Your face. Or did you swallow wrong? Swallowed wrong there.
No.
Yes.
Splashed back on me.
Ah, got it. Yeah. Water's fighting back. So tell the people a little bit about yourself. You know, most of the listeners are interested in persuasion and influence and copywriting and that kind of thing. So tell, let the people know a little bit about you.
Yeah. So the thing is that we started out with psychotactics 20 years ago online. We don't do anything flashy. We stay below the radar. And that is because that's by choice. It's just, mm-hmm. I value my work. I value the time I get to spend. I value the fact that I don't have to sit in the cafe and someone comes up, oh, you're Sean. No, it was what we set out to do. We set out to, I don't know, become famous or whatever. And then very quickly, a client asked me, why do you want to do that? And I didn't have a good answer, so I stopped doing it, and we just focused on the work. So we've run psychotactics for all of these years. We've not changed very much. We run it like any business has run for the past 2,000-3,000 years, same principles. And we take 3 months off. We've taken 3 months off since 2004. And around 2007, we decided we want like a fixed income, as in three times what we spend. So we kind of met the goals of what I call a business, which is to have a better life and to do whatever the hell you want. So no one bugs me. We have good clients. We do whatever we want. We take breaks. After this call, where today's Friday, I'm off for the day. Yeah. Saturday and Sunday, we don't work. So theoretically, we're a business that works a little and plays a little, and then we sleep.
Yeah, so I hear you saying we. So how many people are...
Yeah, it's just involved. My wife and I, Renuka. Okay. My wife, And occasionally we have, like, for instance, for the podcast, I'll have someone who does the music, someone... It's a very skeleton kind of as-is basis kind of thing. There's no, the team is me, myself, Sean, and I, and Renuka herself, she, and whatever. So we theoretically have 8 people working, but.
I like that. Like you can do different departments for different people, different versions of yourself, right?
So, yeah.
So so obviously the point of the business is for you and your wife to do whatever you want, which I love. But what does the business do? Like what's its, beyond that, like what's the purpose of it from the customer's perspective, and who is the customer?
So we started out, the customer at this point, or rather for the last at least 18 years, has been a small business owner, person. We started out with corporate. They would do a lot of stuff, pay us big checks, but do nothing. And that wasn't suitable for me. So I don't care about the checks as much as I care about somebody actually doing something. Mm. The core of psychotactics is like, why do people do what they do? Why is it such a mystery? And why does it have to be such a mystery? Now, when you run a small business, essentially you do everything that my father didn't do. And my father ran a business for 25 years. He didn't have to write any articles. He didn't have to do any sales copy. He didn't have to know any social media. He didn't have to do any of that stuff. And we do. And it's very confusing because money gets flashed in our face. Clients get flashed in our face. Everything that we're not doing gets flashed in our face. And at some point in time, you have to figure out, wait a second, this is not going right. And why is it not going right? And that is because you're not appealing to the customers in the way you should. And as a result, I mean, you're not getting them to buy into anything. But the core of our business has really been that, A, we've got the right messages out, we've converted clients, and then they've never left. So they've either gone some other place, which they should, and then they've come back. And so that's why you don't see any advertising, no joint ventures, nothing. Anybody who's been around that long, you would see that.
Yeah.
You don't have any of that from us because we don't need to. Clients keep coming back. They stay with us for the longest time. And essentially, that's kind of the religion kind of model of business, which is you build a church and then every Sunday they show up, rather than every Sunday you're going out to get new parishioners, new people, you're constantly churning through the whole thing. So you have a very, and it's no different from utilities. So your water company does the same thing. They get a fixed number of customers. You pay the bills every month. They know how much you're paying in advance. It's not entirely stress-free, but it's quite stable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm still not sure exactly
what we do,
what you do.
Yeah, so because that's always evolving. I know. that's all. So we started out with, you know, the standard stuff, which is why customers buy, why they don't. That was the brain audit, the first book. So it shows you specifically the process that goes through the customer's mind when they're trying to buy something, maybe a book, maybe a lamp, maybe a camera. What is really happening? It's just slowed down so that you can understand, oh, wait, I left this part out, and that's the reason why they didn't buy. But from there on, we went on to other stuff that people need in business, like pricing and presentations and stuff. So it's kind of very difficult to nail it down. But where we are right now is you need certain skills. You need a skill like maybe you need to write articles, or you need to write sales copy, or you need to. So what we do is we guarantee that skill. We say, if you join the article writing course, for instance, it's not likely that you will become a writer. It's guaranteed that in 1 hour you will write a 1,000-word article, which meets with all this criteria. And so the reason why you can't pin me down right now is because I can't pin myself down, because it's just like there's this constant evolution. A good idea would be to just go to the website, have a look around, see what fits, works for you, and then that's kind of the best solution you have right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you say that. I heard TD Jakes, who's an American, most people know him as a pastor, but he's also been a talk show host. He does movies, and I heard him interviewed one time, and he said something similar. He's like, I don't like giving myself a title, because then it puts me in a box, not just for you, but for myself. Like, I don't want to be just a pastor or just, you know, a movie producer or talk show host or whatever. Like, I wanted to be our author. He's all those things.
Yeah.
But he wants to, like you said, he wants to kind of keep it open for what's next. Right. Yeah. And as soon as you start slapping labels on yourself, or your client starts slapping labels on you, or a podcast host starts trying to slap a label on you, like, you know, it limits what's possible in the future. Is that?
Yeah. For instance, you know, y'all take pictures, and people, the first question they ask me is, are you a professional photographer? And I know what they mean. I mean, right. Are you a professional? But I know what professional means. So I'm not a professional photographer. I have great equipment. I take good photographs. I don't make any money from it because I choose not to. It's a hobby. That's what hobbies do. It's like, right. Do whatever you and, you know, then I draw cartoons, which I used to sell for $1,000 per illustration. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of stuff. I mean, I can teach people how to be chefs. I can, you know, I can go into a restaurant and be a chef if I wanted to. I could be a photographer. I could be a whole bunch of things. I don't know. I don't care about getting pinned down. It's just that I don't know how to describe that. I just, the only thing I can tell you what I do really well is, if you really want to know how to run a business, which means that you enjoy your work and you enjoy your playtime and the two don't overlap, that's what we do really well.
Sure. Okay. Well, you got psychotactics. I mean, that's a pretty broad roof right there. You can fit a lot of things under that, because all persuasion, selling, marketing falls under that, knowing the psychological aspect of persuasion and done that. Yeah, really,
it's
well.
Cool. I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, as you get into this world of marketing, and then you if you're good at it, you eventually kind of find your way into psychology. Because if you're going to be good at marketing, or copywriting, or communicating, you have to eventually get into psychology and things like that. But I do think it's interesting how you're kind of in a marketing world, and it's saturated with this idea that you have to niche.
Yeah.
Right. And you're kind of saying, well, I don't really do that. And you've been successful. So how would you address that? Cause that's a struggle I feel all the time. Cause I do coaching, I do copywriting, I do consulting for companies. And, you know, so I feel that same, like, don't box me in feeling. So what do you say to people like myself that says, well, I thought you had to have a niche, or you have to go after, you know, you have to niche yourself in order to be successful.
So the one thing that we do go after is a specific result, which is the same thing that you do when you go out for a coffee or when you're drinking a beer. That's why you're rating the beer. You're going after a specific result. The problem is that results are vague. They will say, if you join this course, you will learn how to write better. If you join the headline course, you will learn to write headlines. We're not vague about anything. We go, if you finish the article writing course, you will write a 1,000-word article with all the structure intact in under 1 hour.
Okay.
If you do the headline course, you will write 8 different types of headlines in under 10 minutes. It's benchmarkable. After you finish, everyone, there is no, oh, this guy's not talented, that guy's not good. When people do the cartooning course, which has nothing to do with marketing, but we sell cartooning, you can do this. If we do a cooking course, so what we do really well is we guarantee the result. Because all of our courses and training, we don't offer a money-back guarantee. So everyone online offers you a money-back guarantee, but they don't guarantee the results. We don't give you a money-back guarantee. So you have to be very clear that you're getting the results. Otherwise, you'll never get people coming back. Right, and as I said earlier, most of our clients come back repeatedly.
Yeah, you got to be confident too. You know what you're doing. I mean, if you...
But if you have a specific result, I mean, you know, it's not that hard. You don't have to offer the most amazing results. So, for instance, if say you're learning a program like InDesign, which is a software,
right?
Most people would say, well, I can't teach you InDesign. It has like 200 different things that you have to learn, and all of them have subsets. But I don't want that as a business owner. I just want to learn how to...
Yeah,
I just need to know how to put my ebook together.
Right.
And if you say, and I'm just making this proposition to you now, if I say to you, for $100, I will teach you everything about InDesign. For $300, I will show you how to put your ebook together in 1 hour.
Yeah.
It's not even a decision. We're not trying to do any persuasion here.
Right.
It's pretty straightforward. The persuasion is the result. If you get in your car, you put on the GPS, you go, take me to this place. That's all it's doing. It's not telling you, oh, here's the map of the whole city. You are missing all these roads. You've missed. Yeah, it just gives you that narrow little thing and it gets you to that result.
Right.
And if you give people results, like precise benchmarkable results, you don't have to persuade them. They can see what they're getting, like a cup of coffee. They can benchmark it, and then they come back because they don't get the same coffee anywhere else. So,
I love that because the tendency is for people to make these big, giant promises because they think that's more compelling. But your example there of, you know, $100 to teach you everything there is to know about InDesign or $300 to put your ebook together in under an hour, like I'd pay more for the smaller result. And that for most people that trying to market something that aren't familiar with the space, that doesn't compute at first until they hear it. But their natural thinking isn't like that, right? The natural thinking is, oh, if I want to charge more, I got to do more.
Yeah. And it's, you get a real life example, a 2-liter bottle of Coke. I think you guys call it liter as well. I don't know. Yeah. So 2-liter bottle of Coke is less expensive than the can.
Yep.
So why buy the can?
Convenience.
Yeah, whatever the reason. Yeah. The reason is...
It's cold. It's already cold, typically, if you're buying it at the store.
And I can't get in a car
and
drink from the tooth. You know? So whatever the result. But Coke figured that out.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So Coke figured out that you can sell a smaller can... for probably a higher price than the 2-liter one.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think about that, like every time if I go to Home Depot or, you know, anywhere they have the cooler at the cash register, right? And that cold Coke is like staring at me and I open the door and I pay $1.59, $1.89 for it. And every time I think that same thing, I'm like, man, I could get a 2-liter for 99 cents. But I haven't bought a 2-liter in like 20 years. Like I just don't do it. Even when I have a party, I'll buy a 6-pack or 12-pack and put it in a cooler so that it's cold instead of, because I don't want it to go flat in a 2-liter, right? So there's all these reasons that like you said, Coke has figured out, but some people like the 2-liter for whatever reason.
Yeah, and it has its so you can have a very comprehensive course, you can have very comprehensive consulting, whatever. But people get lost along that way. They get usually what we have right now. So if you go back pre-internet, you had less access to information, and then you had too much information. Yeah. And so what people do when they put a course together, when they put training together, when they put a workshop, when they anything, is what they understand as the job that I have to do is to convert people so that they buy into this entire course. And then they put in 15 videos and whatever. And in most cases, like I was talking about, you know, my camera, I just want to go to manual in 5 minutes. Show me how you can do that. I don't really want to read a 200-page book. I don't actually need you as a marketing consultant or trainer. What I really want is for you to be the GPS, to give me the end point so I can get there as quickly as possible. I don't really want the map of the city.
Right.
But that's exactly what everybody does. So then you have to persuade. Yeah. You have to persuade because you're not stripping, you're not being a GPS.
Yeah.
And that's the most of us think that a GPS gets you to a destination. Mm-hmm. No, that's just a minor part. Even a map gets you to the destination. What the GPS does is it strips 99% of what you don't have to see to give you that 1% that you need to see.
Yeah.
And that's simplifies. And of course, yeah. And then if you don't, if that route is busy, then it takes you down from, instead of going from A to B, it takes you from A to C so you can get to B faster.
Right.
And that's the role that you have with, say, training or whatever, yeah. Right? You come in as that in between.
The example you just shared, because, I mean, like, for instance, learning how to use InDesign, like you were just giving an example. I can get on YouTube and there's probably hundreds of videos on using InDesign. But you know what I have to do? I have to sift through all of these videos that are 30 minutes long before I get to exactly what I need. And am I willing to pay more for going exactly, you know, getting, you know, very specific on what I want? Yes. I mean, because it's time. How much time do you spend searching and looking for something that you really need? You don't know. You don't need everything. You need that one thing that you're showing people how to do.
Yeah, it's good. So, Jonathan, you had some specific area you wanted to go when we started the show. We kind of went off the rails there a little bit, but all really good stuff. What are you talked about the power of three or the idea of threes.
You know, we talk about persuasion a lot on the show, but one of the things that I wrote down that you mentioned is the key to successful selling isn't pressure or hard sale. It's understanding how the brain follows information. And we kind of touched on that. But if you would talk about that, you know, how do you present information in a simplified manner that is more persuasive for people to take action?
So the first answer is it depends who you're selling to and in what format. So I used to be a copywriter in an ad agency, Leo Burnett. And for those who don't know, that's one of the largest agencies in the world. You've probably heard of their advertising, even if you don't know what they do. And you know, you do like a classified, and you do like a full page ad, and then you do a radio ad, and then you do, and all of these different things were still sending the same message across every single time. But you had to format it, rewrite it, create different settings for the very same message over and over again. Because different people were reading it and the format was different. So when people think of persuasion, they think of, oh, sales letter or sales page. They think of those kind of things. It doesn't have to be like that. It can be an article. It could be a presentation. So for instance, when I was doing a lot of presentations on stage, I would go in and do the presentation. And in the middle of the presentation, I would have examples. So say I'm doing a presentation to you. I would start talking about pricing and how you can increase your prices by 15%. In the middle of that presentation, I would show you how say, Starbucks has increased their prices and that maybe how HP has increased their prices. And then I would go through a very detailed explanation of how we increased our prices at 5,000 BC. And as soon as I say 5,000 BC, you don't know what it is. So your ears are perked. And now I'm giving the whole rundown of what we do at 5000 BC, how we go about it, how we've increased the prices. What? So it's a full sales pitch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's a presentation. The same thing applies to an article. So what's really happening is people are looking at it in a very narrow format, which is, let me do an ad, let me do a Google ad, let me do a sales page, let me do whatever, you know, the traditional, what they think of as sales. And people buy long before they pay. And that's the whole point. So by the time they get to the sales page, your goal should be that they don't read the sales page at all. Now, that's a kind of goal that you need to have, because every time you're trying to get them to buy, to read the sales page, to follow up, whatever. But we don't have a problem with that. Most of our courses, they fill up in 15 minutes. So what's really happening? And the question to ask yourself is, what if the client could just glance over the sales page and not really read it at all and still buy? Then what would I have to do in advance to persuade them? What presentation would I have to do? What examples would I have to put in that presentation? What examples would I put into my articles? So what you're doing is a huge amount of pre-sale, so that by the time they're buying, it's what you do. Every time you go to buy a new TV or a computer or whatever, the salesperson is not really selling anything to you. Mm-hmm. You have done all your research in advance. Yeah. How did you get that research? You watched some video, you did something, and you got to that point. To me, that's what really persuasion is about. The fact that you don't need to market at all. That by the time they get there, they've already convinced themselves that it's kind of people tripping over themselves to be part of something. I don't know if that was your question, but
it sounds like what you're saying, by the time they get to the sales page, they're trying to find reasons, every reason to convince themselves to click that order button. So they're just kind of glancing through it. Yeah. They're reading the bullets that checks off. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Yep. I knew it. Yep.
by the time they read the sales page, they're usually already convinced that they're buying it.
Sure.
There's no, yeah. So for instance, there's a Leica monochrome camera. Mm-hmm. The price, the body is about $10,000 to $12,000.
Yeah.
The lens that you get, the 90mm lens, is about $9,000. This is a $21,000 purchase. Mm-hmm. For what? For street photography.
Yeah.
What kind of sales page are you going to write for that? Nothing.
Yeah.
You can't write a sales page for that. No, I have to convince myself before I step in there that I'm going to spend $21,000 for a camera when I already have two cameras sitting around.
Right.
Yep.
And I have like three lenses. So the point is, if you approach marketing from, I have to convince people at this one point in time, and it has to be right, otherwise I keep trying to persuade them. Mm-hmm. Then you're doing it like in a, this is the sales page, this is the something, and then everything comes after that. And if you just stop it and you go, this is the sales page and what comes before that, so that they never get to the after, because we don't have any follow-up emails. So people get there, they get onto a waiting list or a priority list. We put up the sales page, they buy it, everything sold out, we're done. We don't have a follow-up. So people go, you should put a autoresponder course together. But I don't know how to write autoresponders in that way because we don't need to. I mean, I do, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really how life works. Life doesn't actually work in terms of, I'm going to go to something and then after that someone's going to bug me endlessly until I buy. That's how the internet works. It follows you around like some creep. But that's not how life works. If that were real life, you go, would want to get rid of the creep. So instead, it's more like you're looking for something. You find that something. You find out about that something. And by the time you get to the sales page or whatever, I mean, maybe there's an offer that'll, or maybe you'll get a strap with that or something like that. Maybe that'll create some level of urgency. Maybe they will have a limited edition. Maybe there will be something that will create the urgency and the scarcity. But by and large, you should be ready to buy by the time you get to the sales pitch.
Yeah, I have one of my clients that I've worked with. He used to say that enough with the like fake urgency and the fake scarcity that you see all the time in internet marketing and all this other copywriting. He's like, the urgency, when you really understand this, it like changes the way you quote close people, right? Or even the way you open your marketing for that matter. And I feel like you're saying the kind of the same thing in a different way. And that is, the urgency comes from their life. Yeah. The urgency comes from the fact that they want to own the $21,000 camera, or they want to learn how to use InDesign to do the ebook so they can just get that off their plate. It's not from some tactic or a countdown timer, or people that, in my opinion, a lot of people that make their decision based on that or get pushed over them typically don't end up being good long-term customers. Mm. You know, you want the people who know they have a need, they come across your stuff. There's some, whatever that is, rapport that happens. So, and then they make the decision out of their need in their life, not because of anything you said necessarily. Yeah. It's more their.
And you know this to be true, because if you ever have something where you close it, so say we had a copywriting course and then we stop taking any more people, like it's closed, right? Yeah. So what does the person do? Logically, that person should go back, put the money back in their bank or whatever, never take it out. But no, they never do that. They go and buy another course.
Yeah, right.
And exactly. Usually you've set it up so well that if your course is $3,000 or $4,000, they're buying a $10,000 product quite easily. If your course is $200, they're buying a $500 product after that. So you've actually set them up to buy something else. And so that was their need all along. They always wanted to solve that problem. You just didn't explain yourself in a way that made them buy from you instead of buying from the competition.
Right. Mm. Yep. So you talk about all this kind of leading up to, you know, the sales page, wherever they hit the button online to buy. What do you think that is? Like, I know you study the brain and how the brain works and all that. So what's going on? Is that just good old fashioned know, like, and trust that we've seen in business for, you know, years? Or what, how do you boil down persuasion? Like, you have to be doing something, right? Are you just being seen? Is that enough?
No. It's a bit like life again. There's no, like, you meet someone and you go, oh, I really like the belt that they were wearing. No, that's not really how it works. There's a whole bunch of things. You go to a restaurant, you like the service, the ambience may not be good, the food may not be good, but you like the person. There are a whole bunch of things, but essentially marketing boils down to one thing to begin with, and that is risk. I don't know you, and you're asking me to pay to either give up my time or my money or my trust or whatever. I don't know you. And so at the very core, and you see this with photography, for instance, I'm taking a camera and I'm going in someone's face, 1 foot from their face, and I'm going, can I take your picture? Immediately there's risk. Like, what are you going to do with the picture? So I have to create something. And what I do is I go, I'm going to take a picture and I show them a picture that I've taken before. And it's going to look like this. And it's about people of New Zealand. And would you like me to take your picture? So they look at it and they go, oh, wow, that looks really good. And of course, it's in black and white. Sure. So what's happened is I've reduced the risk of A, they know approximately what I'm doing. They know how it's going to turn out. They know that it's not going to be some cheesy, you know, guy standing with a camera and just clicking something, but it's going to be something that I could take home, put on my website, do whatever. In 2 seconds or maybe 20 seconds, you've reduced all of that risk. And if you understand, like, why is a person not buying a $4,000 course, or why is a person not buying this $10 product? It's the same thing. It's what is the primary risk that they feel. Mm-hmm. And if you can look at that risk, and it's never money back. It's never money back, because they already had their money before they gave it to you. They don't need that money back.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's never that. You always go in for a good coffee. You go in for a good party. Whatever you go. So what's the risk?
Yeah.
That becomes like the most critical factor. And the way we solve it on our website is through how most people solve it, which is all your articles should end in results. All your podcasts should end in results. So if I can go at the end of something and go, hey, I got a result, then I'm hooked in. So the information creates the reduction of risk, but the result is what causes me to come back and say, I want to buy this. Yeah. And then we go to the next stage, which is I'm still going to think about it, which means that I have to have urgency and scarcity. So if we just go information, or rather risk, and then result, and then finally scarcity and urgency, you've kind of created that kind of loop. Just to narrow it down to three things, which is what you wanted anyway.
Yeah. Nice tight bow on that. So,
I like you talk about tiny increments, the magic of tiny increments. Yeah. So that's what it's about. It's like, you don't start, you start with small things, developing that relationship, getting one thing instead of just bombarding people with, buy my course or do my consulting. People need to kind of ease into a relationship. So I think, you talk about incremental, building up to that, it's all about people. Like you said, they need to trust you first, and you don't just come up to somebody on the street without showing them or giving them some kind of incremental reason to move to the next stage.
Yeah. So if you look at it as a date, then the first thing you have is like, okay, so you're going to meet this person, right? Someone tells you you're going out on a date, just theoretically.
Yeah.
Not if you do that. Okay. But theoretically you're going out. The first thing that comes to mind is like, what's the risk? Who's this person you're setting me up with? Right. So the risk comes into play straight away. This is before you look at any result. You're always gauging for risk. What do I have to do? Why am I doing this? Who is this person? All of those questions, all of those objections come up. Then when you meet the person, you're going, well, did I have a good time? Would I meet this person again? And the reason is result. And now if you go, okay, we'll see you when we see you, there's no scarcity and urgency.
Right.
That's it. It's gone.
Yeah.
You probably never see the person again. But if you go, hey, how about, I'm only free next Friday at 5:00. Now we have scarcity and urgency.
Sure.
So you most people, they go, oh, what are these systems and these methods and stuff? Don't try and do that with every product and service. Just look at it as I have to go to dinner. Well, what's the first thing? This person is telling me to go to this restaurant. I run into risk. What's the next thing? I get to reward or result. What's the third thing? Well, how can I get back to the same spot, which is urgency and scarcity? It works for everything in life.
Yeah. I want to mention from a visual standpoint, I found it interesting. So I was reading a little bit on the power of three on your page, where it talks about the brain finds it relatively easy to grasp threes, like in elements, colors, and fonts. So if you push that beyond three, typically our brain gets confused. It gets a little overwhelmed about what to look at. I was really fascinated when I was reading down there and you were showing like the examples visually of the business cards. Cause I was like, initially you had like three laid out. So you told, pick randomly three business cards, lay them out or choose the ones that stick out to you. And you listed three on there and it was amazing from a visual standpoint using fonts and just the way, things are separated into threes, that how people, how those are more attractive to the eye and I guess easier for the brains to, or somebody's brain to process.
And it applies to everything. So for instance, when I started taking photographs, that's what the guy told me. He said, try and get three people in your picture.
Yeah.
Like one is really cool, but that's a portrait. If you want to get something where three things are happening, it kind of balances it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a kind of triangle that, and people get into all these technical things, which I stay away from. I just take good pictures, do some drawings or whatever. Sure. But essentially, what's happening is that the most ideal situation is to have one thing. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can just tell me one thing so I can succeed, one thing so I can get more, that's the best. What happens is that the one thing is usually too big and it needs to be broken down. And that's kind of where the three comes in.
Sure.
So when you look at the business card, there's just one thing, which is all the information that you need. But it's too much to focus on so much stuff. So the three kind of splits it so that your eye can go one, two, three. If I make a presentation, I'll say, and we're going to cover 3 points. And they go, oh, good. Because they know for 45 minutes, if I'm going to talk about one thing, that's like a lot to assimilate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you've got to understand with three is that all of them don't have to have the same weight. So in a business card, for instance, the logo can be bright and the name can be just a single line, which it should be unless you have a very long name. In a presentation, you have, like when I do a presentation, often I'll do, and the same thing for workshops. So day one will be kind of very easygoing. Day two will be quite intense. And day three will be like lots of loitering around, lots of going to the cafe because they're assimilating. So we've still got 3 days. And we still have three topics, but the weight of each one is different.
Right.
And it's the same thing with articles or with if you broke your sales page into, say, you know, what is the attraction factor, which is the problem, solution, and target profile. Then what is the risk factor, which is the objections, testimonial, and risk reversal. And finally, the uniqueness.
Yeah.
And the uniqueness is like just three lines. The bulk of it is sitting in the middle, which is what are the objections? What's the testimonial? What, all the bullet points, all of that is reducing the risk. So all of that becomes the most crucial part of the sales page and the bulk. And the top and the bottom are like just holding it together like a sandwich.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like a three-act play, right? The emotional weight is in the middle act.
Yeah.
And literally linked, like the third act is usually pretty quick and short and just kind of a relief period, just so you don't leave people like, you know, at the height of the emotion, you got to kind of let them off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we see the threes in like every good piece of communication, whether it's quote persuasion or not, whether it's film or art, or I remember my dad was a photographer. And one thing I remember him talking about was like, you divide the screen in threes and try to put, especially like people do selfies wrong because they really should be in one third and let the background and everything be the other two thirds. Right. Yeah. As opposed to them. Cause like you said, that's a portrait now.
Yeah.
And once you're the star of the show, but to make it more interesting, it's actually more interesting if you're like over to the side, whichever that is. And then there's more background as opposed to right here in the middle.
Yep.
So yeah, it's that
Jonathan's thinking I'm right in the middle right now.
I mean, it's amazing how much the threes come up in like everything, landscaping.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy how that just keeps coming up over and over. Once you see it, you just can't unsee it for sure.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a magic number or it doesn't work any better than anything else. Just seems like one is too lonely and four is too much.
Yeah.
And that's it. What it does is it gives you the freedom to break down something so that somebody understands it, whether it's a sales page or an article or a presentation. It gives that the ability for you to chunk it into little three sections. Absolutely. So that I can go, this is the end of part one, end of part two, end of part three. And then there is a summary that kind of unites it again.
Yeah. I know when I wrote copy at Agora, like we had kind of a little formula that, you know, typically we try to get like three bonus ideas, right? Three big bonus beyond the, like the main free report. And they were usually older reports that we know worked. But when we introduced those, like the first one be, you know, maybe a page, and the second bonus would be maybe half a page. And the third bonus would be like a third of a page, right? Mm-hmm. Or just even a quick three-line bullet or something. Mm-hmm. Because people don't need, like, then they get tired if it's all the same. Like you said, if it's got the same weight, then none of them seem important or whatever. Yeah. So, and people, I think, just get tired. And it also speeds up the pace a little bit if you're transitioning as you get closer to the close. Yep. I think it speeds up the pace. You see that in fiction writing a lot, where the chapters get shorter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Throughout the book. So it accelerates the pace of the story just by shortening the chapters.
Because the sales page is actually an obstruction. Most people don't see that way, but it's an obstruction. Mm. I want to get to the result. I have to do all this rubbish reading just because you want to put all the stuff on your sales page so that I can make a good choice. So really, all I want is my risk to be reduced. I want to be pushed into this purchase because I can't make that decision myself. And I want a result. That's all I want. I mean, if you could tell me that I didn't have to read a sales page and I would guarantee the result, I would take it. Mm-hmm. I only have to read it because no one does that. They just give me more information.
Yeah.
And I don't get it.
But could you trust that I would be the right guy if all I said was, here's the result, I promise?
No. You have to have the sales page. So we tried that as well. We did a workshop in New Zealand, and we wrote like a 6-line sales page. And the bonus was that you get to meet my wife. You'll be surprised. 6 or 7 people still flew from other countries to come to New Zealand.
That's amazing.
So it wasn't as bad or anything, but I think that the sales page represents, like, if I need to refer to something, it's there. It's like a manual.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't read the manual, don't need to read the manual. And that's the home point. Even when you're selling a camera, for instance, why do I have to have a manual? I just need the manual just because in case, mm-hmm. but really I would like to get the camera and be able to take pictures. I would like to get the software and be able to do what I need to do. All of this scrambling of giving me information is very frustrating. And it's more frustrating now because now I have like these 17 hats that I have to wear as a business owner, which my father didn't have to do. He had fewer opportunities as well, but he didn't have to do all this stuff. And so I'm just like, I have to learn 17 different skills and I have 500 different things. And then there is all the social media and it's like, just let me just, so people are really begging of you to stop being a jerk.
Right.
And we continue to do exactly that. We just continue to say, here's more information. Hmm. I don't want your information.
Yep.
I mean, the information has its value in the sense that it, you know, there is information that inspires. You look at something, you go, oh, wait, that's really cool. I should be like that, you know.
Yeah.
There is information that informs in the sense that gives you a how-to. And then there is information that allows you to be who you are. Like, so I stood up at an event. I spoke at an event in Denver, and there was this other guy who was a really well-known author, and he said, I have 30,000 people on my list. And you could hear this gasp in the room mm-hmm. because they thought that he should have had like 500,000. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of, or someone says, you know, my bounce rate on my website is 80%. And you go, oh, phew, it's not just me. So information does that. It inspires, it gives you a how-to, and it gives you this okay, I'm okay.
Yeah.
But that's kind of performing a different task from when people are buying something for you. And usually when they're reading something about you, they're looking at all these three things. When they're buying something from you, they're looking, how can I buy this light so I can turn it on so that when we do this video conference, it works. I don't want to read a manual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we get the manual.
Yeah. And that's why all these, you know, the smart manufacturers, they now put a quick start guide right on top of the package.
Yeah.
And the manual is either a PDF you can download if you ever need it, or it's buried in the bottom of the box, but the quick start guide is like right on top of the product.
And it's mostly visual, you know, just broken down into like, you know, easy steps, and it's all visual.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Because most people won't cameras are a great example. Your iPhone is a great example.
Yeah.
Like I use about 2% of what this thing can actually do.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like, there's no way I'm using anywhere near the capacity and the power and the different things that it can do.
We have a course for that. We
can help you. Instead of an app for that, you got a course for that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But it'll only take an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to 5 hours trying to research it and, you know, find everything online. Yeah,
exactly. Well, speaking of an hour, we're right at it. Yep. So, probably ought to wrap up. I think I saw Jonathan tip back his last bit of dunkel. And I think, Sean, you tip back your last bit of hot water. So,
all right. Well, Sean, it's been a pleasure, man. We've enjoyed it. Enjoyed the conversation. Yep. Thanks for coming on. And we'll let you get back to the rest of your day here on Friday. You got your whole day ahead. We're wrapping from up. It's dinner time.
I'm speaking to you.
All right. Great speaking with you. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Like, we went all over the place with that one.
Yeah, we did.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we did.
All right.
He's not what I expected, really. And I mean, it's great, great conversation, but pretty monotone and just straight to the point, right?
Yeah. he's very clear on what he believes what he wants. I think that's really cool. Like, that he's built a business in a time where you can easily let a business overwhelm you and put in more moving parts and staff and everything you could ever possibly really manage or need.
Right.
And he's figured out how to do this with just he and his wife. I mean, that's
it's pretty cool.
I really respect that. I mean, that's what I'm trying to build for my coaching business is that kind of easy behind the scenes kind of lifestyle. So I really admired and respect that.
I was thinking about this documentary I watched earlier in the week. Actually, it was last weekend. We're talking about, you know, how to not niche yourself, you know, keep your options open when you were creating a business. You know, we've been told to niche, get as specific as possible. But I was watching this documentary. You remember Adam West, right? The famous, the very first Batman. Yeah, so it's one on Amazon. You should check it out, Sean. You'd find it really interesting, but it's about his life. He was one of the up-and-comers with so many of, like, these other famous actors during his time. You know, he was the shining star, and then he took the role of Batman for, like, 3 or 4 years. I forget how long that series ran. But after that, he was completely typecast and he couldn't get anything. He couldn't get a business. I mean, he couldn't get any jobs in Hollywood after that because they had, they were like, it's Batman.
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. That's tough. That'd be tough for me to watch because I heard him speak at a Dan Kennedy Info Summit and it was absolutely the worst.
Yeah.
Speech I've ever heard in my entire life.
Really?
I promise you half the room walked out.
Really? Wow.
Half the room over the course of the like first 20, 30 minutes, I bet half the room walked out. They just start checking their phones and then they start,
it's just rambling. Call.
Yeah. And it was just so like self-indulgent. It was crazy.
Oh yeah.
But you know how Kennedy does, like he had built this whole superhero theme and this whole Batman theme and, you know, so of course that was going to be the keynote speaker.
Yeah.
It was awful. I just remember I felt bad for him. Like it was just,
Well, you know, he's used to, of course he passed away like a year or so ago.
Yeah.
But his thing was going to, you know, he was known for going to Comic Cons and these things, like all these nerds coming up to him every year, you know, like, oh, it's Adam West. So he's, you know, he gets all these accolades and.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
It's not the same at a Dan Kennedy event. You know, people are like, okay, what'd you do? give me some relevance here, you know, some marketing strategy.
Exactly.
But it is a fascinating, you know, it just shows, you know, he's making the money during that time. But afterward, it's like you niche yourself so much to the point where people are like, you just do this. You're not what we're looking for.
it's tough, right? Because like everybody uses the example of, well, would you rather have a general practitioner or a surgeon if you want to make more money, right? They use all these types of things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I heard Tim Ferriss has got a great blog post that he wrote a long time ago where he talks about he believes like, and I don't know if he still believes this or not, because this is pretty old, but if you Google Tim Ferriss and generalist, the post will come up And he thinks generalists will be more valuable in the future than specialists because they're able to connect dots and see things, you know, like a lot of salespeople, copywriters can do.
Right.
Because you have to be able to come up with metaphors and you have to be able to come up with examples and all that kind of stuff when you're in sales and marketing and persuasion. So I think there's a lot of marketers and copywriters and things like creatives in general or that have trouble with that niching for that very reason is that by nature, I think they tend to be, they see connections and possibilities and all this stuff. So you don't want to limit yourself. So yeah, it's an ongoing struggle for myself. I know it's like, I just, and you can be good. And the fact is, despite what some people say, you can be really good at a lot of, at not a lot of things, but half a dozen things. There's no reason you can't be really good, especially in today's world where you have access to so much stuff.
Right.
Exactly. You could be, a, you know, you could be like Sean, you could be a good photographer. You could be, you know, good copywriter, good speaker, you know, good cook.
Yeah.
I think that was the different things he mentioned. Like you could be really good at all those things.
Yep.
And probably have more fun in life because you've got the variety.
Well, I've told you the story so long, you know, I used to wear myself out with trying to niche, you know, because you're niching in this and niching in that, and you're creating separate platforms in these niches, you know, and that creates more work. So you're just basically, you know, tripling the work that you're doing, you know. And then I realized, you know, I went to, I forgot what it was, maybe a Brendan Burchard event where he's like, yeah, you can, he's like, you don't need a niche. Screw that. He's like, you can hit these other markets out there, but you don't have to be, you don't have to tailor everything to them. Right. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, be a generalist and still market to all of these industries and all of these, you know, these groups out there without altering or tailoring everything that you have to them. So.
Yeah. It's an interesting like kind of back and forth that you have to play with. And I think it's like anything else in life, you have to kind of find that middle ground.
Right.
You know, it's not one extreme for the other. It's not, don't stand for anything and be super general about what you do. And it's not like you have to be super niched. It's kind of got to find that middle, middle road and just kind of roll with it and be open to what's going on. So
absolutely.
All right. Well, I'll let you wrap.
All right. I do have to read our sponsor before I forget. This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at, one of these days, I'll actually read them at the beginning. It's brought to you by Craft Beer Club. They search out the most exceptional craft beers from around the country and deliver them straight to your door on a monthly basis. They have a lot of options. You can choose from a monthly, bi-monthly, or just a one-off gift. If you want to give that to a friend, it makes a great gift any time of year. And you can find them over at persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer.
So I just ordered mine on subscription a few days ago. So it takes, I think they said 10 days or so to get the first batch. And then I got mine monthly. So I'll be soon, probably maybe next week. We'll see if it comes in time. Next episode, I'll have the first dozen or so beers ready to go for that. So.
Excellent.
I think they do three or four different kinds out of the 12. I don't know. We'll see how it comes, and I'll explain more when I get mine, and we'll be able to show people what it looks like and how I'll do a quick video we can throw up on the site as well.
Very cool.
So yeah, I'm excited about that. And I'll have, since I can't go to the store anymore, I just figured I'd get it delivered.
It's a one way. If you really hate wearing a mask, this is a great way to avoid it. So
absolutely. So.
All right, guys. Well, as always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.